Dash number 9234, Roderick McFarker, part 2.
So, discretion being the better part of valour, he'd cease to make trips himself. Is that what he meant?
He wouldn't be allowed to go from there. None of them would be allowed to go. In Madrid, we found a Captain Lance. And every time that we came back from the front, he was in close consultation with Miss Jacobson. It was a very nasty situation, which I personally felt very distasteful indeed.
Who was this Captain Lance?
He was the British attaché, military attaché. Subsequently, after the war had finished, about, I think, 1939, there was a series of articles in a paper here in Scotland on the British Pimpernel, who openly said that he'd been rescuing fascists from Madrid, and of course providing information to the British for transmission.
Why was Lance in contact with Jacobson?
Well, because I was, we were being sent up to the front to take out wounded and so forth, and of course we could readily identify the units that were up in that front or were to be in that front. And naturally, soldiers didn't, in all instances, they might disclose their units and so forth to somebody who was working under the Red Cross flag.
Was Mr. Jacobson deliberately giving information to Lance?
Oh, yes, I'm sure she was deliberately giving it. I know that... Well, we ourselves were very worried about it. And the Spanish Republican people were very worried about it, too. And in fact, they stopped. They were furious when we left, the three or four of us who left, that because they had regarded us as a controlling element in this unit, but we just couldn't stand it any longer. We just walked, we went. But there were, in fact, we before we left, the Spanish Republic and for a secret service, I suppose, had stopped passes for most of the unit. Because Miss Jacobson came back in a furious temper one day. Apparently she'd gone down to ask for her passes for the unit to go to the front. And some rather innocent officer had gone through the file, and he said, I'm sorry, there's only passes for four of you, he said, the rest... The only four was the doctor, myself, Morris Linton, and George Burley. So that gave the game away. So they were very, very suspicious indeed that information was being passed.
Why should Miss Jacobson have wanted to give this information, do you know?
Yes, because she was a pro-Hitlerite.
So, was she a deliberate plant in this organization?
No, no, she was Sir D.M. Stevenson's secretary. But I'm perfectly certain that he hadn't any knowledge of this particular role that she was part in playing. But I've no doubt that when she went, she was asked by the British Secret Service to pass on information.
What kind of background was she? She doesn't
that
sound
I'm
British.
Not sure of. She was, well, it's a Swedish, well, it's a Norwegian or some kind of... I never investigated. I don't know.
Did she speak with an accent?
No, I don't think she did. No, she was quite clear accent.
You mean English or Scottish?
English.
Did you speak to her about anything?
About this?
About anything at all? Any political discussions with her? Anything of that
kind? Oh, well, we had... when the... when Madrid was again threatened by the Italian advance on Guadalajara, I, by that time, was the senior member, apart from the doctor, of the unit. She'd appointed me the senior member. And she asked me, you know, she said, what are we going to do? She said, if the Italians are successful in this advance and isolate Madrid. I said, in the first place, I said, we should hand over the food we've got left to the authorities to distribute. I didn't like the way that it was done anyway. And the second thing, I think, is we move out with the army. And as Sir D.M. Stevenson told us to do. Oh, but she said, we're not here to take sides, she said. We are here to look after the wounded, was it, she said. Anyway, she said that we ought to stay where we were. I said, well, I disagree with you. By this time, of course, there was a very critical situation developing in the unit between those of us who were pro-republic and those of them who were, in a sense, they weren't anti-republic at all, most of them, but they weren't interested in taking sides, as it were. And so we had this conflict, and three of us left. Morris Lindley's now dead, and the doctor of Crome, and myself, and went to the International Brigade. And that was a... We had, of course, I remember we were also smuggling fascists out of the Madrid embassies of one kind or another, one nationality or another. A lot of them had gone to ground in some of these embassies and in various flats. And I think they were known to the Spanish authorities, the Republican authorities. And in actual fact, they were quite glad to see the back of them without having them on their blood on their hands. So that in one sense, the Scottish Ambulance Unit took an enormous number of these people out to Valencia, where they went aboard British warships. And went away through that exit. I refused to go. I refused to go with it, with that unit to Valencia, because I didn't like what was going on.
Could I just stop you there to ask you one or two questions?
Yes, certainly.
I was asking you about what you'd personally gathered about the political beliefs of Miss Jacobson. Did she say anything to you to indicate what her politics were or what her attitude towards the war was?
No. Morris Lyndon said to me that she had a photograph of Hitler on her bureau in the house. I didn't see it. But he said he had seen it. He was a journalist, as a matter of fact, so he would know, he would see it. And there was she was obviously taking sides in this matter.
Was it?
And George Barley had evidence of it in the previous 4 months when he was out.
This is what Barley had said to you after you left Valencia.
Yeah.
Was it only at Valencia that you first became suspicious of her?
That I became suspicious, yes. As a result of that conversation I overheard between the British attaché, military attaché, and Miss Jacobson.
Was she the only one in the ambulance unit whom you suspected of this kind of thing?
Yes. The rest were genuine, I think, genuine volunteers. And I think the majority of them were indifferent to. They were there, as it were, on a kind of voluntary basis, prepared to, you know, look after wounded.
Just as a humanitarian?
Yes,
too.
As humanitarian.
Now, I interrupted your narrative with you leaving Valencia, but if I could ask you, before we pick up the narrative, what your first impression of Spain had been when you had arrived?
Oh, my first impression of Spain was that I got a general impression of enthusiasm and solidarity and of confidence in their forces of winning. And a unity amongst the in the army and in the civilian forces that was quite cheering. When I was in, when we went out, our first time in under fire was down in Madrid in the Manzanares, and the campesinas were there in that line, and they were being pretty savagely shelled, and most of these were peasant boys, campesinos. And what really dearly struck me so emotionally was the way that these boys were being taught to read and write in the trenches, and their enthusiasm for the Republican forces. This was what struck me so forcibly at the time. There they were, oh, they were youngsters of 16 and 18 and so forth. And ill-armed, too, by that matter of it. But quite courageous and determined. And there they were, being taught to read and write, which they'd never had the opportunity of reading before.
When would this have been, at Manzanares?
February 1937.
And whereabouts were you actually based, the actual unit?
Oh, we were based in Madrid. And we drove out from Madrid. Well, first of all, we went out to the university city, which had been pretty well leveled. And there was a desultory fire, shell fire and so forth going on, but there was very little active attacks going on at the time there. The battle had taken place. But there were other points of weakness where they were taking which they were attacking. And we were sent out to these. And then we went up to Chinchon, to the Jarama front, where we were taking people out and taking them back to hospitals for surgery and for dealing with.
So first you went to University City, then to Chinchon, and then to Manthanar.
No, first to University City, then we went to Manthanares, and then we went to Chinchon, to the Harama front.
What particular job were you doing with the unit?
Oh, I was, I was there, so I was helping to organize the evacuation of the wounded from the front. And for at times I was also working in the hospital as well as doing that.
What specifically did it involve, organizing the removal of wounded from the front?
Well, you had to control the exit of, you defined the ambulance sites for withdrawal from the front, which was not, and then take them out that way.
So, did
so there was sent, you know, they brought the wounded down to certain ambulance stations to be lifted out and taken back.
Who were the stretcher bearers?
Mainly Spanish. Some priests amongst them as well. In fact, there were quite a lot of priests at one point.
How close to the shooting did you actually go at Chinchon and Manzanares?
Well, at the Manzanares, it was we were there right in the middle of the shelling, and so forth. And in Chinchon, I was mainly at the hospital base most of the time.
What impression did you get of the kind of medical facilities that were available?
Oh, I thought that the surgeons and doctors who were working as onlooker, I would have said they were very competent indeed. And they had, they had this blood transfusion service that was built up out there for the first time in the history of warfare by the Canadian doctor, Bethune.
Did they have enough drugs?
They had, well, let me think about that question. Yes, they had enough drugs, I think, they hadn't a surplus of drugs. And in fact, they had real problems, I think, because by this time, the Italians were blockading many of the ports with their submarines.
Did you see any of the rebel units brought back, wounded, or were they all Republican?
No, all Republican. All Republican. Saw some Moors at some point, I can't remember when. But they were brought back too.
You saw some Moorish wounded, did you?
Yes, been brought back.
What kind of wounds were most of the wounded suffering from? From shell fire or what?
Shell fire. There was a good deal of shelling of Madrid too, you know, and there was quite a lot of casualties within the city itself. But shell fire. We saw bullets, wounds as well. Rifle fire. And shell fire too, and bombing.
Nasty wounds from dum-dum bullets. You mean cratered wounds?
Yeah.
Did those casualties just die?
Oh, they were sent back to hospital. Well, the hospital facilities were very good. They were, but in a number of fronts, it was very difficult indeed to cope with the amount of casualties.
What about casualties amongst the stretcher bearers? Were they taking many casualties?
There were casualties amongst them too. But, when I was in charge, I tried, we're now crossing great areas of fighting, you know. We're not just dealing with it in a step by step. And I was always extremely careful to try and keep my searcher bearers within reason from being slaughtered in these encounters. And in the main, I avoided most of it. That doesn't mean to say that we didn't have a great deal of fighting and fun and casualties. We had them in Brunetti, and we had them again just at the very end. We had a tremendous at Gardesa and these areas where I was involved. Have you read on the Spanish things any of the? Have you read Bill Alexander's book?
Yes.
Oh.
What about the rebel side? Would they withhold fire when the stretcher bearers went out?
I don't remember them doing that very well. I went not when I was taking them down from the they kept on their shelling and firing and bombing. And in Brunetti, we had the Caperones came over and smashing us all to pieces. In fact, on that final attack they made, there was very difficulty in getting people out at all.
Now, to come back to the narrative, you were talking about being at the Manzanares area.
Mm-hmm.
What else happened at this stage to you?
You mean in the attacks? Just picking up the wounded and taking them back by ambulance is what we were doing. And trying to avoid being killed too, of course. What else? What was really quite my first experience of war was there. And there were some Basque doctors and troops there too. And I remember seeing what an example it was, a Basque doctor going out and picking it, and in the middle of all the shelling, picking up the wounded. So an example that has always remained with me, as how you conduct yourself. Oh, very good.
Were you pleased with the functioning of the Scottish Ambulance Unit?
Well, yes, it was functioning properly. It was trying to do its role, which was to collect wounded and also to distribute food. I was displeased with the fact that we were taking the food out into the suburbs and distributing it ourselves. I thought it should have been left to the authorities to do, which would have been much fairer. And I said so to Miss Jacobson. But she did not, she wasn't prepared to accept that. And I think, my own view is that I think some of the food was taken to the hidden army that they boasted about they had in Madrid.
Fifth Column.
Fifth Column.
What gave you that impression?
Oh, well, she was meeting these people. And I have no doubt to do that too.
So she seemed to be meeting the richer Spaniards in Madrid, did she?
Oh, yes, because I remember going into a coffee place in Madrid and being accosted by an English man who seen the Scottish Ambulance uniform, obviously thought that I was, as it were, one of them, and said, "Oh," he said, "they're not going to win, you know, you can't allow them to win. I said, that's what I came out to do. And he recoiled, you know, realizing that I wasn't supporting General Franco, and that he was one of the fifth and hidden army in Madrid.
What